From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
As regular readers and listeners know, I've had a long-time interest in the organic seed movement, especially farm-based companies that grow at least some of the seed they sell and are proud to tell you where they source the rest. I like to know where my seed comes from. Lately, I've had the pleasure of getting to know a number of new-to-me companies, including True Love Seeds of Philadelphia, whose website promises culturally important open-pollinated seeds to people longing for their tastes of home. Today's guest is Owen Taylor, one of its co-founders. More in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, a leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
With Christopher Bolden Newsom, Owen Taylor started True Love Seeds, which offers a diversity of vegetable, flower, and herb seed from more than 50 small-scale urban and rural farmers committed to community food sovereignty, cultural preservation, and sustainable agriculture, and who each share in the sales price of every seed packet sold. Hi, Owen, and thanks for making time today between packing seed orders madly over there, I bet, huh?
It's my pleasure. Yes, I was printing labels up to the moment I got on this call.
I bet. Well, good. It's great to close my eyes and think about all the beautiful organic seed going out to happy people all around the country right now. So that's good. Before we get started, I wanted to say that with a transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com, I want to give away a couple of True Love Seed gift cards to two lucky listeners. So I'll have info about that. And I also should say we were introduced by Nate Kleinman of Experimental Farm Network as part of a recent story I did on organic seed companies for the New York Times that you were also part of, and we'll give a link to that. So that's the housekeeping, and so I want to hear a little bit about True Love and the background and the mission and so forth to get started.
Great. Well, we started True Love Seeds in 2017 and launched our first online catalog at the end of that year. And I've been growing food since I was a kid in, you know, a small garden in northeastern Connecticut where I grew up. But for the last 15 years, I'm 40 now, I've been working in, I guess now it's closer to 20 years, I've been working in food justice movement, environmental justice movement in San Francisco and then New York and then Philadelphia. And so this really springs out of that work. For 4 years, when I first moved to Philadelphia, I happened to get a part-time job with Dr. William Moyes Weaver and the Roughwood Seed Collection. And I helped him manage his 4,000 plus varieties of heirloom seeds. That's actually where I first met Nate Kleinman. I put out a call for volunteers and he came to help out. Oh. And yeah. And so we kind of got our starts at the same time, partially thanks to Roughwood Seed Collection. And so while I was working there, Dr. Weaver, his focus on seed stories and documenting the histories of food really, you know, and also the work with caring for these plants that I'd never met before and certainly didn't know from seed to seed, it really captured my attention and I fell in love with seed keeping. And so that's when I decided to come back to the food justice movement, work with the farmers that I've known for so long and people who I think are doing amazing community work through food and farming and kind of recruit them as seed producers. Yes. And seed keepers for our seed catalog. So that's how it all came together.
And that's something that's distinctive, interesting about True Love is that who grows your seeds, your network of growers, you told me when we've spoken before, are the people for whom they're the ancestral seeds. So tell us a little bit about that.
Right. I mean, part of, you know, working at Roughwood, we had seeds from all over the world, from all different peoples. And they were sitting, you know, living in our collection. And I really loved being able to share them back to their original keepers. And it started me thinking, what if, you know, the producers of these seeds are the people for whom they're most important, and they're these seeds going home to the people who love them. And so that was the impetus for what we're doing. And so we're always looking for farms that are culturally rooted. to work with, or helping small farms reconnect with cultures lost through assimilation or, you know, traveling across the world to this land. And so True Love Seeds is a lot about maintaining connection, but also rebuilding connection through seed keeping.
Right. When we spoke for the New York Times story, you mentioned to me, for example, pigeon peas or gandules that are grown for you by East New York farms in Brooklyn. And that's a legume that's a popular Caribbean ingredient and elsewhere. And so that would be one example, for instance, of what you were just speaking about, of the people who love and cherish these crops, growing and producing them for you and sharing in the profits from the sale of each seed packet. Yes?
Yes, exactly. When I first moved to New York from San Francisco in 2005, I started working with East New York farms, doing trainings there and collaborating with their growers. And I heard from the beginning that they had a focus on Afro-Caribbean crops and were even considering starting up their own neighborhood seed bank, because there's hundreds, literally hundreds of community gardens there. A lot of them are run by Jamaicans, Trinidadians, people from the Caribbean. And so I thought they would be a perfect collaborator. This project between us might be a way to push them forwards on their seed keeping goals within the community. And so they decided to focus on callaloo, you know, leaf amaranth.
Ah, yes.
On bitter melon, on long beans or bodhi, depending on where you're from, and then gandules or pigeon peas. And
right.
The pigeon peas were bred, you know, most people who try to grow pigeon peas up here in North America, in Northern North America, will not have success. But luckily, there was a plant breeder in Georgia named Dr. Sharad Patak, who bred them away from their day length sensitivity. So now they'll flower regardless of the day length and make fruit regardless of the day length. And so we're able, because of this connection to East New York, who had gotten them from Cornell, who had gotten them from Dr. Sharad Patak, you know, now we have these gandules that people in various diasporas, and they're beloved by, you know, people from parts of Africa, from the Caribbean to South Asia. And so we're able to provide these seeds now that will actually make fruit for people who love this vegetable.
It's pretty amazing, really, that when you think about that, that the seeds too have adapted to a new home, right? To a different home. Yeah.
And again, thanks to someone who, you know, an Indian man who wanted them to be available in on a different continent.
Yeah. Yeah. You have an African diaspora collection of seeds, a whole selection of seeds that people can browse through on the website. Sorghum and sesame and other things. Maybe we could talk about that.
Sure. Well, in the very beginning of True Love, we collaborated with many farms, especially locally. And most of them were African diasporic farms, you know, Black people in Philadelphia growing their traditional foods, including my partner, who's the co-founder of True Love Seeds, who's a Black farmer from Mississippi. And he continues growing his traditional Mississippi legumes, especially like the crowder peas, the field peas, but also turnips and mustards and things like that. And so he really helped me to visualize what an African diaspora collection could look like as someone, you know, he runs the farm at Bartram's Garden, Sankofa Community Farm, and they have an African diaspora garden there. And so he was already curating this collection of plants from both West Africa, where the majority of Black people in the United States come from, as well as from the American South. And so he kind of helped me think about how to create a collection like this. But then through our work over the last 5 years, you know, we have people on staff who also have a focus on the African diaspora, including my coworker, Amira Mitchell, who's about to launch her own African diasporic seed farm north of the city. And she, as well as other coworkers of mine, have been adding to that collection in addition to all the different Black farmers we work with around the country. So it's just happens to be, you know, we have a particular focus on working with Black farmers. We work with farmers from all over the world, including, you know, different parts of Asia and the Americas and Europe. But because we work with a bunch of Black farmers, our African diaspora collection has been growing.
Yeah. I mean, just there's some gorgeous okra and just, you know, really interesting things, some climbing gourds, So definitely good for a browse on a winter mm-hmm. day.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's been very popular with West Africans.
Yeah.
Because we carry, you know, like the bitter eggplants from West Africa and different greens like Efoshoko and Efogubure from, you know, Nigeria and Ghana. And now we're working with a Nigerian farmer, Halima Salazar, in Mississippi. And we have partners also from Nigeria who send us seeds to add to the collection. So, you know, but then also popular with African-Americans because of the amount of African-American heirlooms we have in there that may not have been found in West Africa, but have become important over the last 400 years here.
Yes. So you mentioned the word eggplant, and you have what may qualify as the craziest eggplant I've ever seen in the catalog, not necessarily in that collection, but I think it may be something newish. It's just called, I think it's dark pea eggplant. It's like, it looks like a little berry or fruit born mm-hmm. in, along the stem, like, I don't know what to say, like what, not like grapes, but more in that direction than eggplants. And hilarious, it's a tiny little thing, beautiful green. Now, what is that?
Yeah, it's actually called ka. I mean, at least from the people who I learned about it from, we work closely with the Karen refugee community from Burma or Myanmar, and they have come here after spending time in the Thai refugee camps, sometimes a decade or two, because of the conflict in Burma.
Yes.
And they are amazing to work with because they grew up as subsistence farmers and have still the memory of their traditional foods. And they're seeking them out with an amazing focus. And so they're finding these varieties, including this tiny eggplant, which is actually an American species, a Central American species of eggplant.
Oh.
Most people are familiar with the eggplants. Most of us who are probably listening eat are, you know, the eggplants that are Asian or Italian. Their origin
right.
is Asia. Some people say maybe Africa, but this one is totally different. It's Solanum torvum. And it's from Central America, but extremely popular in Southeast Asia. And that's how we know about it. And it's very bitter. That's what ka means, bitter.
Oh.
And so they created an English name for us to describe it, but it's really just called bitter. And it's used both as a food, and I've learned to love it. It's very bitter, but also as a medicine to help with fever and malaria. So it's considered both. And
medicinal also, huh?
Yeah. And we actually grew one from Seed Savers Exchange this year of the same species. And it was the tallest plant on our farm. Yeah. It was probably 12 feet tall.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
Covered in these little berries, eggplant berries. But the ones that they grow at Novik Community Farm, where the Karen refugees work in South Philadelphia, are shorter, like, you know, taller than your average eggplant, but a lot shorter than the one we grew.
Well, I'll show a picture of it in the transcript of this show again over on awaytogarden.com because it's fantastic looking. I mean, you would never guess it was an eggplant, so it's kind of hilarious. And you have like a winter spinach, Haldenstein winter spinach. What's that?
Yes. Well, this one came from Dr. Weaver's collection at Ruffwood.
Oh.
And I forget where, I think he got it from Ark of Noah or Noah's Ark in Austria, but I'm not positive. It's a spinach that is very cold hardy. It comes from a mountain village in Switzerland where it's been grown for generations. And it's a cool spinach also in that it has these pointy seeds. They're different from most people, the seeds most people are familiar with as spinach. But yeah, it does very well over the winter. So we actually have it in the ground now at our farm under plastic row cover for it to go ahead and size up in the spring and then make seeds for next year's catalog in the summer. It's delicious. It's kind of like a nutty flavor. It looks a lot like your average spinach, except for those pointy seeds. It just does really well in cold weather.
Huh. And, you know, there are some, you're just talking about cold and so forth, and one of your collections, I think, really speaks to the fact that, especially at this time of year, you know, we're in the winter, we're hungry for thoughts of spring and summer and planting the garden and so forth. And we forget when we're shopping a lot of us, even experienced gardeners, forget to shop for the things for later on, too, to have an extended harvest into the cooler months. And you have a whole collection that really focuses on cool weather, season-extending sort of crops that can be done, whether it's with protection like high tunnels or low tunnels or row cover or whatever. So let's just talk about some of those, because there's some great ones in there.
Sure. Yeah, my favorite is the Landis winter lettuce, which is a very hearty lettuce. It's kind of butterhead type, crispy and delicious. You know, part of the reason we have this whole collection is we collaborate with Tobacco Road Farm in northeastern Connecticut, just a town over from where I grew up.
Oh.
And they're friends of my mom and her husband. And I've worked there for a couple seasons, and they breed winter varieties because they sell all year round, and they're in a particularly cold place. And so they, for example, bred a couple different types of Dutch arugula to be selected for their climate over the winter. It had already been selected, I think, for Maryland winters, and then they selected further for Connecticut winters. And they also bred together several different varieties from the same species as Misuna, like Tatsue and Maruba, together. Oh. And then selected for cold tolerance. So they might let 75% of it die from the cold, and the next year it's only 50%, and the next year it's only 25%. Huh. So they've selected this winter hardy Misuna landrace, they call it. Huh. So we put those in the collection for other people that like to have produce when nobody else does. And so you can plant them in November, perhaps, depending on your climate, and let them size up a bit, few inches tall, and then cover them for the winter, and then have a harvest in late February, March, when nobody else is harvesting. Or you could plant them in late February or March and have them pretty early in the season still.
Mm. And you have flowers, you have herbs, it's not just vegetables, I mean, and even not just edibles, you have flowers. I think there's one that I've never seen before, actually, a nigella, I guess, what do they call it, love in a mist or something, but it's the pods that form after the flowers are very dark in color, very beautiful, and the flowers aren't the familiar blue, but they're white. Is that something new in the catalog? Or?
It is. We just added it, I think, last week. Oh. This year, we're actually landless at the moment. We have 2 years on our land, thanks to our friend Linda Clark, who grew this for us. We are renting from a flower farm, and since we're there every day, we advise her on producing seeds from her cut flower crops. And so this was one that was extremely generous with seed pods, and we decided together that it would be a great offering in the catalog because you can use it, like you said, both as a cut flower and as this ornamental seed pod. There are nigellas that are used medicinally as well, but this is not one of them. But we were just excited about it because it's so beautiful and unusual looking.
Huh. I think one of the other ones that caught my attention, I think today I saw it, maybe it's even sold out already. It's a giant marigold, and I don't know how to pronounce it, Huacatay, like wakate or something.
It's wakatai.
Wakatai. And it's like a almost 10 foot tall marigold. It has these, it's not prominent flowers. I've seen pictures of it before. I think Peace Seed, Alan Capular out in Corvallis, Oregon, I see that he worked with it, and I think his kids at Peace Seedlings sell it as well. Is that one you've grown before?
It is. I actually found it growing at Roughwood when I was working there.
Ah.
And Dr. Weaver had it under, it was mislabeled. And I was posting about it online, and I was like, this is not correct. And so I found that it's Tegetes minuta. The flowers, it's named for the smallness of its flowers.
But it's no minuta plant, that's
no,
for sure.
it's taller than us.
Yeah.
It's grown especially in Peru and other parts of the Andes for its edible leaf. It's a culinary herb that's made into a paste, kind of like pesto, I guess, with a totally different flavor. It's also called black mint or the black mint paste. And it's used in a lot of the signature Peruvian dishes, including ocopa. And it's a really beautiful plant. We actually use it as a cut flower, not for the flower, but for the leaves, for foliage.
Right.
Because we're able to get it for food, for foliage, and for seed all in the same year.
Yeah, that's a great one.
An awesome plant.
So at the beginning,
one of our most popular varieties, actually.
Oh, it is. It is. Yeah. So it's not just me.
No, it's mostly Peruvians, actually. We'll get orders for that and for our Aji Amarillo pepper and some of the other Andean crops all together.
Okay. So I mentioned at the beginning, you know, that you kind of promise in some of the catalog language and so forth, you know, that people, you know, with sort of a cultural connection to certain plants and looking for the taste of home, so to speak. And you have a particular interest, I think, personally, or in some of the familiar Italian flavors, yes, and foods, edibles, yes?
Yes, yes. I grew up with my great-grandparents from southern Italy, and so I'm always trying to make the reconnection, even though they didn't pass it down through the generations, to the Italian garden and the Italian table. I mean, I remember my great-grandfather's garden, but it's a blurry memory because I was a young kid and I didn't know to ask questions at that point. And so it's been a journey to connect with other Southern Italians, which could even look like stopping at the local pizzeria called Napoli Pizza and be like, I'm from that region too. And then, you know, I've gotten a lot of ideas for plants to grow from this Neapolitan man at this pizza shop. And people have emailed us. I got an email from someone from Southern Connecticut, where my parents are from, saying, hey, I love the way you talk about your Italian grandparents. I'm going to send you some seeds.
Oh.
And so just like it's been awesome to reconnect with these plants, but also connect with Italians and get a little bit more of a sense of myself and my family through these relationships. And it's the same with Irish crops because I'm also Irish. But it's been more fruitful with Italians because of the different histories of colonialization. A lot of Irish people were growing for English customers, you know, and they were landless. In southern Italy, there's more of a connection to traditional foodways that's distinct. But both of them have been a wonderful journey for me and reconnection. And so we have an Italian collection, and hopefully through our various growers and coworkers, we'll have an Irish collection in the next couple of years as well.
San Marzano tomato, did I see?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's considered by most Southern Italians as the best tomato. I know there's more paste tomatoes out there, but I grow it every year so I can, like this year, I put up over 50 quarts of sauce in my basement from harvesting the seeds and then making tomato sauce. So I'll always grow that one.
Yeah. No, it's a star for sure. In the last couple of minutes, are there sort of some that we haven't talked about that you're excited about that you want to kind of shout out to us? You know, because I mean, obviously you're over there surrounded by how many kinds of seeds are you listing this year?
Oh, you know, I haven't even counted.
It's in the hundreds.
It's definitely in the hundreds.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you go in our basement, you're just surrounded by seeds.
Any favorites or anything that you're seeing, you know, people are excited about or anything you want to sort of shout out in the last couple of minutes?
Sure. Yeah, I'm excited for some of our new legumes. We should have our Bambara groundnuts back in stock soon, which are a subterranean black-eyed pea from different parts of Africa. And it's very popular with Africans in the diaspora.
Oh.
I don't know that anyone else carries it at this point in America, in North America. We'll have some Ecuadorian pinstriped peanuts that my coworker Julia, who is Ecuadorian American, is really excited to offer. They've got red and white stripes on the seeds.
Oh.
We have, again, this year, the Cucuza gourd. It's a Sicilian or Southern Italian gourd that maybe people are familiar with back in stock. And I've just fallen in love with it over the last couple of years.
Has a lot of personality, that.
It really does. I guess you need some space for it. It grows really, really long and tall and climbs and makes, you know, 3, 4, or 5 foot long fruits.
Yeah.
And they're delicious when they're picked a little bit younger than that.
Yeah.
There's a lot. It's hard to pick. We have another Horace Pippin. I don't know if people are familiar with Horace Pippin, the African-American artist from the turn of the last century. We have several of his varieties in the catalog, and we're adding another one this year called Old Pepper Pot, which is a very Philadelphian pepper. that one of our growers reintroduced, and we'll be passing it off to my coworker Amira for her African diaspora farm, which is called Sista Seeds. And we're just excited to be building the African diaspora collection in that way too.
Lots going on over there. Lots going on. A basement full of seeds.
That's how it goes. Yep.
I'm so glad you could take time out this morning to talk about it. And I know you're swamped, and I really appreciate your making room for us today. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm going to have a couple of gift certificate giveaways with the transcript of the show, and obviously give all the links to all the things we've talked about and to the website and so forth. So thank you, Owen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Talk to you again soon.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, the leading publisher in books that share wonders with the natural world, including A Way to Garden by Margaret Roach. The stunning guide imparts decades of plant wisdom and challenges readers to think beyond their garden borders and to consider the ways gardening can enrich the world. Available everywhere books are sold and at timberpress.com. They invite you to come grow with them.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy seed shopping and gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.